Hey everyone, and welcome to Unconventional Wellness Radio, a powerful and inspiring podcast set to revolutionize and disrupt healthcare. It's time to put you in the driver's seat and be the force of change necessary for the lifestyle you've always wanted. I'm Frank Ritz. I don't know if you guys know of me, but I'm sort of like I've been the behind the scenes guy with Jackie and her website for, has it been like 9 years now? And so I just came off of a couple of really inspiring things, and we're looking really into 2019 to provide some massive value for everybody who's been a fan of the Paleo Mama and everything that we have been doing, or looking for a more natural way of being able to help take care of yourself and your family and your friends. And so I think it's about time for me to go ahead and sort of step out from behind the keyboard, if you will, and in terms of all of the support that I have provided, and maybe start actually taking a little bit more of a mentorship and coaching role that I've been wanting to. Life works in very strange but yet mysterious ways, and one day you finally have that aha moment. And my aha moment has actually been over the course of the last probably 5 years. To tell you a little bit of a backstory, I am a certified physician assistant, and I'm also a service disabled combat veteran. And I have really just tried to find myself in terms of what do I do, and how am I supposed to change the world? Because I've always wanted to do something like that. And so let me start by first telling you, I have no disclosures, if you will. I don't have anything that I necessarily am going to speak about. And all I'm going to try to do is just provide value and tell you that there is hope. And that's really what the biggest part of this message is that I just want you to have hope. And so I started off in my childhood as believing that I was going to just simply be a doctor. That was it. That was what I was supposed to do with my life, right? And I already figured that out. I figured out the whole world at 8 years old. And so I had this mission of always wanting to help people, and that I was going to be a doctor. So I get to high school, fast forward a little bit, and I'm doing everything that I think that I should be doing. I'm taking those classes that I should. I'm trying to get really good at science, all that kind of stuff, right? And so then I go into college, and this is where I start getting my first real experience of kind of like just that transition of starting to finally understand what it is to kind of be out there and be an adult. And so I still had that feeling, though. The common thread was, I'm going to be a doctor, right? So I went through all 4 years, and the way that it worked at my school was you could be anything. I'm a graduate of the University of Florida. Go Gators. And so I had a degree in exercise physiology, which was pretty heavy in health sciences and things like that. And I applied for as I was applying for medical school, first of all, 9/11 happened my senior year of, upon graduation. So my senior semester, I'm getting ready to go, 9/11 happens. And then unfortunately something even more tragic happened. My father passed away. And from that point forward, turmoil erupted. And so, I still kind of sort of wanted to be a doctor, but of course I started becoming a little bit more aware of, how real life can be. And so I applied, and I got some secondaries back, if you will, and I just took forever. I didn't spend any time filling out my secondaries, because the way the medical school works is, at the time when I applied, you take your MCAT, which is the test to, it's the college admission test, if you will, for trying to get into school, and then you apply primaries, which are just however many colleges you want to apply for. And then they look at your packet, if you will, and then you'll usually do some secondaries for most schools. And so secondaries came back on about 2-3 schools, and I just never filled them out really well. Actually, let's just face it, I never filled them out at all, because I turned to alcohol and I turned to food in order to combat and deal with my depression about losing my dad. And so I finally filled it out and I turned it in, and I actually got a phone call from the board. I got an email from the board about my packet and saying that we would have loved to accept you. You seem like you were very qualified, but we've already filled up our class. And so that ship sailed. And so at that point, I started going, well, what do I do now? Right. So for the last like 20 years, I was supposed to be a doctor. And so now what do I do? So I started getting this feeling of, let me go ahead and use my degree. So I graduated, I finished college, and then I started working at a health fitness center and worked my way up through that, became a general manager of one of the stores. But then I got this inkling, I can't be the only member of my family that hasn't served in the military. I actually come from where my father served. You know, both of my brothers served in the military. And so I said, I don't want to be the only one that hasn't served in the military. And so I went and I saw a recruiter. Come to find out that, you know, this military recruiter ended up being Army, rolled out the red carpet. Obviously, they were accepting everybody because of 9/11. And there was just one problem. I was very overweight. When I left college, I must have been probably about 265 pounds. Because like I said, I drowned my sorrow in alcohol and pizza. And that's pretty much all I ate. Because of 9/11 and then subsequently losing my dad. And so I was 265 pounds and I was extremely well qualified to join the service, but for one reason, I was drastically overweight. And so the recruiter wanted to work with me and he said, here's the deal. You got to be able to do this. And he laid out a good plan and goal for me. And I started working at it. And I started realizing that it made me feel good. It actually made me feel good to start focusing on my food, start focusing on the fact that I needed to stop drinking so much, and that I also needed to be able to get out and enjoy the sunshine. And so I started doing some really good Army training, started putting a backpack on, just walking, started out slow, just started functionally moving because I was terribly out of shape. I probably couldn't even have finished a half of a mile walk when I first started. I couldn't even do but maybe two push-ups. I mean, I was really, really out of shape. And so slowly over the course of the next couple of months, I started working out. And I come to find out that I started getting really good at it. And so I started kind of like literally peeling back the layers of the onion. And I found out that I'm actually not too bad at trying to be good. And so I started really getting into, what do I want to do when I'm in the military? Well, that was where that common bug of wanting to help people came back. And so I enlisted into the Army as a combat medic. And I was allowed to actually join because I ended up losing over 55, almost 60 pounds in order to be able to actually join the service. So I joined the service and I ship off to basic training. Finished basic training, probably one of the best experiences. You'll hear of a couple of experiences that I probably would never do again. But one of the best experiences that I would never do again in my life. But at that time, when I graduated basic training, I showed up to kind of like my first assignment, if you will. And I had the opportunity, because of the fact that I graduated high school, to go ahead and go on to officer candidate school to become a commissioned officer in the U.S. military or into the United States Army. I said, you know, I had to call a couple of mentors that I had made throughout the time. And I even called my recruiter and I said, what do you guys think? Well, I decided to go ahead and go the officer route. And so I went through something called officer candidate school, which was a 14-week at the time course, much more stringent than basic training. You learn a lot about how to be a leader and sort of started pulling in those heartstrings about, like, you know, training you on the fact that, you know, you're not a born leader, but you can be created one based on your choices and based on the things that others can teach you. So I finished officer candidate school, and then I was sworn in as a newly promoted second lieutenant in the Army, but my job was not related to medicine whatsoever. They started me off as a ordnance officer, and I do remember, like, as if it was yesterday, I turned to the other folks in my unit at school, and I said, what in the, you know what, fill in the blank, is ordnance? I come to find out that it's actually just maintenance. It's maintenance and munitions, meaning that I was responsible for the maintenance of trucks and I was responsible for the maintenance of weapons. Needless to say, totally a needs of the Army thing, not what I was intending out to serve my country doing. But I embraced it, right? Because I was still serving. And so I did that rep for about 4 years. Fast forward now to my first unit that I deployed with. I was part of the 101st, came back from an overseas tour in Korea. And so I said, I got to get back into medicine. So during my deployment, I actually started shadowing both an MD as well as my what is called a battalion PA. This battalion or squadron PA is a person in charge of the health of a particular unit. Just so happened that we were about 300 to 500 folks inside of our unit. And I just watched him work, and I just simply said, okay, I think I finally get it. This is what I'm supposed to do in medicine. So I had the opportunity to apply for the inter-service physician assistant program, which is all branches come together and they all study together, and then they go and learn their clinicals for the following year. So it's a 2-year program. First year is what we call drinking from a fire hose, where you learn all of the medical sciences that you can possibly jam into your brain in 1 year. Probably ended up taking 3 to 5 tests a week and somehow survived. But during that, that's when I met Jackie. And so she joined me after we were married for my last final trimester of my first year of PA school. And then she was with me from that point forward through my clinicals, which we moved to another place and finished that out. And so that was it. You know, I graduated from physician assistant school, and I was like, that's what I guess I'm supposed to do for the rest of my life. And so I practiced as a PA, absolutely enjoyed it, learned a lot about soldiers, learned a lot about medicine, absolutely enjoyed what I did. But then my time in the Army caught up with me. And my first deployment, especially the situation that happened, or the couple of situations that happened, started really catching up with me. And I was really, really good at being able to hide it. That's one thing that you learn in the military, is something called military bearing. You could absolutely have chaos going on in your life, and you're not supposed to show it. And then on top of that, you know, as a senior enlisted, okay, so somebody who's been an enlisted soldier in the Army for a while, as well as officers, we're not supposed to show any type of weakness, because our soldiers pick it up really, really quick. And so I was able to bury the entire understanding of what happened in my first deployment. And I'll tell you that story now. So in my first deployment, we were on a mission that we were supposed to just go out and do what is called route clearance, as well as some route redirection, if you will. That was what this mission was in particular for. So we kind of rolled out, if you will, from the wire, and we went out on mission and stuff like that. And then we kind of did what is called a hasty stop. And so we came to an intersection of one of the larger routes that were in the Baghdad area of Iraq for the beginning of the war. So this is like around the 2004, actually more so 2005 timeframe. So, you know, 2 years, we were like coming with the second... We were coming in with the second wave, if you will, of what happened. We got kicked off in like late 2002, early 2003, after, you know, 9/11 had happened. And so we come to a hasty stop, and my lead gun track, the NCO, calls me, because I was the platoon leader. I was the mission leader, if you will. And he said, sir, I think that we're dealing with a couple of wires that I see out there. And we're about to roll over them. Well, come to find out that we actually were on top of them, to tell you the quick story. But during that time, I actually went and I walked up to his truck, and I grabbed my binoculars, and I'm looking at it, and I go, you're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. I see exactly what you're saying. And so for some strange reason, an out-of-body experience happened, and it was definitely something that I was a brand-new officer. And I made sort of one of those judgment mistakes, but thank God there's a good news story out of this. But I made a judgment mistake, and I actually walked with him out to go see these wires. For some reason, we thought it was a good idea. I don't know why, folks. I wish I could tell you that, you know, probably every other brain cell was telling me, don't do this. That's a dumb idea. But instead, I kind of just let instinct take over and, you know, probably put caution and judgment into the wind. And I walked up there with him. And so we see the wires and stuff like that. And then finally, after what seemed like probably an eternity, but it may have just been seconds that passed by, I grabbed him and I yank him back and I go, what are we doing? There's some expletives here. But what are we doing? I grab him and I pull him back to the truck. Well, we call something called explosive ordnance disposal. And if you've ever seen the movie, oh golly, what's it called? The Hurt Locker. This is big on explosive ordnance disposal, folks. And so it just so happens that a particular truck that was designed at the time to dig up dirt and stuff like that and take a look at things, it was passing by because it was finishing up its mission. And so we kind of like flag them down and we said, hey, would you do us a favor and just take a look at this? We believe that we're dealing with an IED. And so they look at it. They start digging. After about, I don't know, must have been 15, 20 minutes maybe, the person who was in charge of that vehicle comes over and talks to me and said, wow. He's like, did you know the size of the piece of ordnance that we're dealing with? And of course I told him, I said, no, we just saw the wires and all that kind of stuff. He goes, well, you're dealing with a pressure plated IED and the size of the round that's underneath it is a 155 round. Okay, so let's explain what that even means, right? So a 155 round, folks, is the type of thing, if you've ever seen the gigantic tank looking thing with the big old cannon on it, that is an artillery style of vehicle. And what that is designed to do is hurl a bullet over the course of not just feet or meters or yards. It's supposed to be up to miles away. And a 155 round is the standard round size of what one of these massive tank-like artillery vehicles fires. So needless to say, it packs a large punch. It is probably a couple of steps underneath like some of like our rockets that we can fire that can actually decimate like a square kilometer. And we stood and we were standing on it. And we come to find out that not only were we standing on it, but it was also pressure plated. Folks, I could have died that day. And I didn't. And EOD came out. We called them up afterwards because we identified that it was an explosive device. EOD comes out, and of course I tried to put on the whole, you know, facade of everything's all good, everything's great, and let me go ahead and blow up this piece of ordnance. So they let me do it. It was kind of cool. They had a little robot that it went out and attached a piece of C4 to, and they let me push the button. And I watched it blow up, and then of course another sense of doom fell over me because I said, wow, that could have been me in that gigantic mushroom cloud right there. And it wouldn't have just been brown. It would have probably had that wonderful color that, you know, that would have been the rest of me. And so, you know, we went back and we tried to decompress and stuff like that. And there were some other things that had happened while we were over in Iraq that you just don't forget. And so, excuse me. So I come back. Good news was, though, is that first of all, I made it home. And then secondly, I was accepted to physician assistant school. And so I show up for physician assistant school with your classic PTSD symptoms. You know, at the time, our first year was down in San Antonio, Texas. That's where we went to our first year during PA school. And they had the same exact barriers that we used during my deployment. To direct the traffic, like I was saying. I was on a highway, and I remember it specifically. My hands were sweating. I was gripping the steering wheel with all that I had inside of both of my arms, sweating profusely, and driving probably on a 65-mile-an-hour highway. I'm driving like 17 miles an hour. Sweating. People are, you know, honking their horns behind me and stuff like that. And the reason why I felt that way was because of these same exact barriers that our enemy at the time would use to actually explode into our vehicles to try to kill us. Nightmares. Had them. Pulling away from people. Kind of could do it, couldn't do it, of course. Like when I was on duty, everything was all good. When I was at home, I was by myself. Turn to alcohol, self-medicated, do all those things, right? So I say that because somehow, by the grace of God, I was able to still finish PA school. But one of the largest blessings that I had was that I met Jackie, and we got married. Somehow, she... she still saw something in me. Wish I could pause it because I need some water. But finish school, go to another unit. Ended up in Fort Stewart, Georgia. Thank you, babe. Ended up in Fort Stewart, Georgia. And I started seeing soldiers as a certified PA. And it was therapeutic. And so, and so, she's awesome, by the way. And so, all right. I think I finally have myself composed here. And so it was therapeutic to be able to talk to soldiers about their experience as well. Excuse me. I was offered everything under the sun. I was offered any type of antidepressant medication. I was offered, you know, opioid medications for my physical conditions and things like that. Passed it all up, drove on. But then I started looking into integrative health. And I had the opportunity to do this while I was still on active duty. So I had some really great physical therapists that were doing some integrative measures. I had some chiropractors that I had the pleasure and just blessing and of working with. And I started realizing while I was still on active duty that I was allowed to actually use natural methods instead of conventional medicine methods to manage my PTSD and my, you know, musculoskeletal conditions. It was at the same time, all right? So let me parallel this, that the same time that I'm starting to get this bug about doing this, Jackie is creating the Paleo Mama website. And so she's looking into how to create whole clean food for us to be able to eat, raising the kids with whole clean food, raising me, if you will, with whole clean food, and just it all kind of started weaving together finally. So back in 2009, I think, I did another deployment. It was my final deployment. But this time I was on the provider side and not the, I was still a soldier, but I mean, of course I was on the provider side, not the soldier side. And so through my workings with integrative health, I was able to start implementing these things because while we're downrange, meaning like while we're deployed, I can't give medications to soldiers that are going to stop them from being on target. You know what I mean? Like I'm not allowed to give them psychotropic medications because they might cause drowsiness and, you know, feelings of numbness and detachment from their surroundings. So I had to avoid antidepressant medications, but these are men and women that are like, you know, possibly on their second, third, even fourth deployment, because at the time we were super embedded in the Middle East and we were fighting like just chronic battle fatigue, right? So like even coming back for 12 months or 15 months, we were usually just recycling and just returning back to the Middle East. And so that was not an option. I was not allowed to utilize opioid medications. I wasn't allowed to give these prescriptions, you know, because they were dealing with chronic, you know, not just battle fatigue, but now we're dealing with like, you know, chronic knee pain and back pain and shoulder pain and hip pain and this pain and that pain. And I can't give these medications either. And so I had to get creative with how am I going to manage the stress of the environment, both in a mental and physical way, and yet still be able to have them be able to complete the mission. So I had to get creative and I started developing these ways. And so then my physical and mental conditions caught up with me. And at the time, this was now rewind a little bit to 2014 or 2013. I couldn't do service anymore. And so, I was medically retired because of my conditions. And subsequently I decided like, well, what do I do from here? Right? Like now I'm a PA and I still want to help people. So what in the heck do I do? So I went back into being a PA, of course, but this time I said, I'm not going to do conventional medicine. I'm not going to do, you know, go see somebody and try to fix problems. Instead, I'm going to actually sit down with people and talk with them about their problems and start practicing a lot of these things that I started learning in the military about trying to manage things without conventional medicine ways. So I started working for an integrated health clinic. It was kind of cool. We worked with a chiropractor as well. So I learned even more things about massage therapy and, you know, Reiki healing and acupuncture and Just all of these really awesome things that are out there that are unconventional and are still extremely useful when used in certain ways. And so anyway, at the same time, like I said, Jackie's website is starting to really gain some massive traction. She's really exciting a lot of folks. People are looking to her for do-it-yourself things and recipes and how to eat right and all these things that she's implementing with our family. And so, like I said, we start stitching and weaving together this basket or rope even more, if you will. And so I said to myself, like, you know, the city that we were living in was the city that I grew up in. And it just wasn't doing it for us. Like, we didn't want to be in the city that we were living in anymore. So I look at her at one point and I go, if you could live anywhere in the country, where would you think about it? And so that's when we started talking and we come to find out that we both love Western North Carolina. And so I said, okay, we need the means to get there. We're going to need the money to get there. So what do we do? So all of a sudden this thing within that week pops into my inbox, and it says that there's a job available for a physician assistant instructor in Western North Carolina. We're opening up a brand new school. It's going to be the satellite school of this other school near Charlotte. And we need a PA, or we need some PAs to go in there and launch this and start teaching PA school. I apply and I get the job. So we bundle everything up again. And we've only lived where we were living for 5 months maybe? And so we're like packing up again. So hi, welcome back to the military. So we pack up and we move out here, don't know a soul, and I start teaching. Well, at that point, that's when Jackie found doTERRA and some other things that she has been working on online and really started gaining some massive traction at this point about her financial success that she was appreciating through her website. And so I remember at one point, I looked at her and I go, well, okay, so this thing that you got going on is pretty awesome and you've grown it exceptionally well. And where are you thinking about going with this? So she looks at me and she goes, I'd love for you to come home and work with me. And I told her, I said, well, you know, being the pragmatic that I am, I had to say, that sounds all well and good. It scares the living, you know what, out of me, but if you can replace my income as a professor in PA school, I'll come home and work with you. And she did. And so now, excuse me, present day, I've been working with this gal for the last 3.5 years, and I haven't had to work in practice since. And so through that time, we have been able to really dive into, or I should say I've been able to dive into, although I will speak about Jackie here in a couple of moments because she deserves a great deal of credit about my recovery through PTSD. But I started digging a little bit more. I got into the Veterans Administration system, wonderful system when it works, right? Like, so everybody has a passion for helping veterans, and we love that. And we think that that's an amazing benefit that we have. The thing is, though, is that, like, you know, it can be a little clunky at times. And, you know, there's certain types of modalities, if you will, for being able to be treated that aren't covered by Veterans Administration services. And so chiropractic medicine worked really well for me. Acupuncture worked really well for me. Come to find out, the VA actually will cover that. So that was pretty awesome. But then I started moving over here into Western North Carolina. And if you haven't been here, it's a very natural community. At the same time, also, we started getting this little crazy bug about, like, well, let's be farmers too. Like, so, like, we went from this, like, let's do organic food or clean food. And then why can't we start doing it ourselves? Like, why can't we start making our own food? And so that whole thing was starting to kind of come to reality and crystallizing. And so we had a hobby farm where we first started when I was teaching PA school, and then we subsequently moved out of there and moved north of Asheville, and now we have a fully fledged farm here. And the agricultural piece of my overcoming things has been remarkable. There are now studies out, folks, that are showing the benefit of combat veterans or veterans getting their hands into the soil, feeling those nutrients and those minerals that are able to really help with not only mental, but even possibly physical conditions. And so I'm here to tell you that that's true. Farming has been therapeutic for me. There is this fancy term that we're now throwing around called agrotherapy when we're talking about veterans. And it's been monumental for my mental health. Something about getting into, you know, I'm not a big gardener, but I still work with the land. But something about working with the land and working with animals has just been phenomenal for me. And so that's another piece that was always kind of working in there besides these non-conventional methods that has really helped. And lastly, one something that has really helped. Well, excuse me. So that's the piece in terms of like our nutrition, you know, and then I started functionally moving better with the farm and getting active and getting outside. One thing about Western North Carolina is it's unbelievable. The hiking trails and just being in nature and having like just this big backyard here. So that was really helpful. I started sleeping better, and I want to show you how to do that eventually. But I started actually getting like 8 wonderful hours of sleep a night. No nightmares, no, abrupt wake-ups, if you will. I was rested. I was able to reduce stress. I was able to manage my anxiety through both, you know, some conventional, more conventional ways, but a lot of unconventional ways. And then we started removing toxins from our home. You know, we started like eating off of the right things, using the right utensils, using the right food products, getting rid of these processed foods, not spraying anything at our farm and raising things in our organic methods. All of these things, you know, getting out and getting sunshine, you know, like started doing all these things. And through these baby steps, I've been able to overcome most of my PTSD symptoms. I still carry some with me, you know, like Jackie can attest to the fact that when I'm sitting in a restaurant, I got to sit in a particular spot. My house, good luck breaking in. It's like Fort Knox. So, you know, I still have some nuances about me, but I guess don't we all, but by and far, I would definitely say that I'm feeling pretty solid about where I'm at today. Here's the one piece that I'm going to do my best not to lose it, because I already started losing it a little bit. I had to say something, so now I'm starting to lose it. So if you have mental health issues, if you have depression, if you have anxiety, if you have anything, right? You have a fear of whatever. You have a support structure in your life. You may have a parent. You may have a brother. You may have a sister. You might have a cousin. You've got somebody who loves you. They are imperative to your well-being. The problem is, though, is that by design, we as human beings are extremely not humble. We're terrible at sharing our heart. And I sit here today to let you know that it works. You have to share what's going on in here and what's going on in here with somebody. You can't keep it to yourself. Because if you do, it'll eat you up from inside out. Jackie has been that for me. I'll keep it together, I promise. You just need somebody who will be willing to accept that abrasiveness and who will accept the harshness and allow you to pour out of you what you have inside. And you know what? It's not going to happen once. It may not happen a dozen times, but it's got to happen over time. We're not creatures, excuse me, I use the analogy that we're not light switches, right? Like you can't just go and just go, wake up all of a sudden the next day and just go, that's it, I'm going to change myself, right? Like you might wake up with the motivation to do so, but it's going to take time because it took you time to get there. And so you need to find somebody who can be your social support and your social structure, who loves you. That's huge. Who loves you and is willing to accept you even when you're at your worst. find that person in your life. It's crucial. If you get nothing from this video, find someone in your life that you know that you can do that with. Could just be an old high school friend that you Facebook message them. You know what I mean? Text them if you have their phone number. Just say, like, I need somebody. And we always had that moment where, you know, I could share something with you. But reach out, find somebody. Somebody who's going to be allow you to be transparent and allow you to literally off gas, you know, and just be your worst. And they'll just look at you and tell you everything's fine and everything's all good and be willing to accept you for everything that you are. Because what we need to do is, what I've realized is, in my own mental health, trying to push away those aspects or those characteristics that I didn't like, I found out that they came at me even harder, with double or triple or even five times the effort. I would push away, and it would come back even harder. So what I've had to realize is that these are all characteristics that make me up, and I have to embrace them. And so instead of, you know, proverbially poking at the lion, we need to instead embrace and give that lion a hug. And so I say all that because support structure is worth it. I mean, I hate statistics. I know that statistics wake us up, but statistics don't give names. And it's a shame that there's a statistic of 22 veterans a day commit suicide. Those 22 people, how many dozens to hundreds of people do they affect that are still living? So it's, don't get me wrong, the 22 a day is an alarming number. It shouldn't even be one a day. But it is not just those 22 that are ultimately affected. Like I said, I'm trying not to sound callous when I say this. I don't want it to be one a day. But it's, you know, we forget about also possibly the people that survive them, right? Because I always say that to my patients, I've said it for years, is that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And that we've allowed it to get to the point where we're actually thinking about harming ourselves. Some of you guys that might be watching this, some of you guys that, you know, could be on the call, I'm just going to be real. Somebody out there right now watching this may have had thoughts of harming themselves. And I tell you, find someone. If you share your heart, you're going to be vulnerable. And yes, you're going to, you know, probably not be your best self. But the payoff is huge. Guys, the payoff could be life-changing. It could be life-saving. So I urge you, find someone that can help. And, you know, I just want you to know that that there's hope. Sorry. I don't know where this is all coming from, but, well, you think you talk about it enough, and sure enough, there's always this little tiny bit that, like, will stir up inside of you. But I just want you to know that as a conventionally trained provider who has been practicing medicine on my own, excuse me, I don't feel like I've had it, but I definitely know that we can help. And so don't give up, all right? There is hope for you, for your family, for your friends, whomever. We all know somebody. I jokingly say that, like, mental health is like the Kevin Bacon, you know, the 6 degrees of separation game. Like, we know somebody who has been affected, or we are somebody who is being affected. And we have to bind together, and we have to create community again. That's where our relationships, or excuse me, that's where our society is lacking. I just got finished with this really great, very inspiring conference that was put together here in my neck of the woods And providers from around the country, matter of fact, medical providers, doctors, dietitians, nurse practitioners, you know, those types of folks came together to talk about nutrition. Like, how is it that some statistics that I can throw at you, right? Because they only are supposed to design to like catch attention because they are powerful in that regards. But like, let's get rid of these statistics, right? It is 80% plus of Americans with chronic disease, they're actually preventable. I'll just let that sink in for a second. 80% of Americans and our healthcare costs are because of preventable disease. 80%. If I take five people, four of them have chronic illness. What? I mean, what are we doing to ourselves, right? Like, this has got to stop. We have got to stop eating and not taking care of ourselves in this way. And so I want to help. And so I am devising a way to get what is going on in here out to you guys. And I want to make sure that we can reach you in such a way that you can apply these things immediately. So I asked the question, where do you see yourself in your wellness journey or in your way of trying to be more natural? Where do you see yourself in the next year? Because a lot can happen in a year, and we want to help you do that. And so, I'm going to be teaming up with a lot of these really great connections that I've made, other medical doctors and other folks who are wellness experts. And I'm going to bring to you something that is going to be real, raw, probably unedited at times, and extremely valuable and easy, because that's what's important, right? I consider, and I can tell you, just for example, I can tell you about food all day long, about why you shouldn't eat this and why you shouldn't eat this and why you shouldn't eat this. But the fact of the matter is like, does it taste good, right? Because like, if something doesn't taste good, it's not like it's going to be nutritious, because it's not even going to go into our mouth. And so we need to uncover and peel away the pieces of this onion to make it to where it's like useful for you. And so that is my goal. That is my mission. Like I said, I've been weaving this together, or I shouldn't say that I've been weaving it, because let's face it, no, I haven't. It's a story that I've just had to live out. Or had the pleasure to live out, but now it's finally all coming together. And so we want to teach you about food and functional movement and how to get better sleep and detoxing. We want to teach you all these things. And so I realize that all of these things happen because I want to be the conduit, if you will, of the testimony to be able to bring it to you, to let you know there's hope. That you don't have to become a statistic. You don't have to wonder why are you a slave to so many things, and let you break free and let you be empowered and let you understand that there's hope. I'm excited. I can't say, you don't see it, but I'm scared. Scared for a good reason. I have fear of what's to come, because I want it to go really well. And, you know, I just want to make sure, excuse me, that it's something that you can always provide value with. And so, you know, love you guys. I'm planning on actually starting a podcast. I promise it won't be this long. But I'm going to bring a lot of these subject matter experts on my podcast. And really just try to meet you where you're at, you know, whether it be on your computer, you listen to me in your car, whatever. I want you to be able to hear this information, get some value, but most importantly, help you figure out the way to apply it into your life so you can start making the changes you've always wanted and start living the natural life that you deserve and stop being statistics. So, like I said, love you guys. Can't wait to broadcast to you here in the near future. And please stay tuned to this website, because we're bringing big changes as well. And we're going to meet you where you're at. And we're going to have the beginning of the most healthiest 2019 that we possibly can, and beyond. And so if you want to comment below, share your story, please let us know in those comments below, because stories are powerful. You have a story. You are a story. And we need to bond together no matter what way it takes. We need to bond together, and we need to be willing to get each other's back. And most of all, we need community. And so I urge you, please share your story. Let us know how we can help, and then help each other. And I cannot wait to see what this whole thing, as we roll it out, is going to do for you guys and all of us. And yeah, I'm super excited. I'm just about to explode out of this chair, but I can't wait. So I hope you enjoyed this, and I appreciate you giving me your time. And thanks for letting me tell my story. Bless you.